Rams are back where they belong, where it all began in 1946. The last 20 years have been a bad dream. Now, it's time for the Ramble On Podcast. Here are your hosts, Steve Mason and Ryan Abraham.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ramble On Podcast. I'm Steve Mason along with Ryan Abraham. We're recording this on Wednesday, April the 27th at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And, of course, tomorrow is the NFL Draft. The Rams have the number one pick. They're throwing a big draft party for people that are season ticket holders or at least have made their deposit. That's a ticketed event downstairs from where I am at LA Live. And, Ryan, it's an exciting time.
It is an exciting time. Draft day, you know, for college football, you got signing day. The NFL, you got draft day. No games, nothing like that, but you get to find out what the future of the franchises will be. And it'll be interesting for the Rams, Steve, with the first pick and then a couple days off before you get the next pick in the fourth round. But it should be really interesting.
Yeah, and I'll mention that myself, Marcellus Wiley, and Eric Dickerson will be at Tom's Urban hosting a draft party, welcoming the Rams to town and awaiting that number one pick. And I'll say it on the podcast, I think Jared Goff is going to join us on that show tomorrow night, right after he is chosen. And a guy that I've gone back and forth with on Twitter forever and ever is Tony Siracusa. Never really knew Tony. I knew you were a Bruin, and I, of course, tweet a lot about the Trojans and have worked for USC for 9 years. Never really knew about everything you're involved in. You work for Last Word on Sports.com. Describe, first of all, the company.
Yeah, hey, Steve. It's great to be with you and Ryan. You know, Last Word on Sports is truly a global sports media coverage company. We have about 300 writers around the world, 12 countries. We actually have guys covering cricket in Pakistan and India. We have guys in Europe covering EPL soccer. We cover the Canadian Football League. We've got guys covering rugby. And of course, domestically, we have all your, you know, baseball, basketball, football, college football, which is what I run. I've got about 30 writers in my college football department covering stuff around the country. We cover MMA. There's really nothing that Last Word on Sports.com doesn't touch.
So tomorrow's a big day. Rams have the number one pick in the draft. You know, I think the drama has been eliminated here. We're pretty certain, and so many different sources have indicated that Jared Goff is the pick. Is there any chance that that's wrong?
You know, I don't think it's wrong, because I think that this is not, a football only decision. I think, and I'm excited personally, because I grew up a Rams fan. I grew up in LA in the mid 70s. I had a blue and white Harold Jackson jersey. So this is big that they're coming back home. But this is not a football only decision. I think, you know, you're coming back to Los Angeles. You sold tens of thousands of seats at the Coliseum as your temporary home. And I think it's hard, as good as Carson Wentz could be, and I think he probably even has a higher ceiling down the road than Goff does, it's hard to ask these new fans or fans you're coming back home to be patient and wait a couple years with Case Keenum at quarterback while we groom Carson Wentz. I think that that's a hard pitch to make when you've got Goff, who in my estimation, and I've seen virtually every game he's played, he could probably replace Keenum by the start of the season, or at least shortly thereafter. So I think while Goff is probably the safe bet, I also think it's the right bet.
Hey, Tony, it was, you know, interesting move, obviously, to jump up. And you said it was not just a football decision. No team's ever moved up from 15 all the way to 1. But there wasn't, you know, this surefire, you're not even sure which quarterback it's going to be, waiting at number 1. Were you a little bit surprised with, you know, both Goff and Wentz have the questions about them. Were you kind of surprised that the Rams were, willing to make a move like this, trying to get their franchise quarterback?
I really was. I think they gave up a lot to do it, and I get why they did it. Like we've said, there's a lot of PR involved in this and creating the buzz and the excitement of having the number one pick as you come back home. But, I mean, let's be clear. This isn't like we're picking Andrew Luck. This isn't picking Peyton Manning. This isn't This isn't even picking Jameis Winston. Like you said, Ryan, there's no surefire pick in this. They both have big upside. They both have some question marks. But I think that this was done because, you know, there obviously you don't want to go into the season with Case Keenum being your number one guy and you don't know really what you have after that. So I think that there was a need to kind of push the envelope on this.
So let's talk about Jared Goff, because it's, you know, it's pretty clear he's the guy. Talk about his skills, his upside. We had Sonny Dykes on earlier this week, who says, you know, one of the, you know, qualities that he really has loved about him is his intelligence, and also his makeup and his composure and his leadership skills. But talk about him in terms of his actual abilities and raw talent.
Yeah, I think that there are some people, if you don't watch enough Pac-12 football and you read that Sonny Dykes is running the spread offense at Cal, there's a little bit of a misnomer that goes with that, because a lot of what Cal did was short field work. You know, it wasn't the typical spread where you look at one read and if it's not there, you take off sprinting. It was much shorter reads, a little bit more time in the pocket. And one of the things that I really like about Goff is the progression reads that he does. He'll look past the first option to a second and third. He's very calm in the backfield. I think that really goes to what Sonny Dykes was talking about, his intelligence in the backfield. He can get away with it because he's got a really quick release on his throw. His mechanics are terrific. You know, he really can hit different spots on the field. He's got good size. He does a good job of finding receivers in stride. You never saw a lot of instances during Cal games where receivers were having to stop and wait for the ball. He does a really good job of hitting the outside shoulder on sideline routes. So I think he's got all of the things that you want in a really good quarterback whom you're going to have to rely on quickly. Because, again, I think he's got a chance to beat Case Keenum out for the job by the time the season starts.
He seems to have
he's got a lot of those physical attributes.
Sorry about that. He's able to put balls in tight windows. I mean, I think make a lot of the NFL throws. It seems like that's what scouts like the most. And, you know, once the production ends, he threw all those touchdowns and, you know, started for 3 years. Then we start picking these guys apart. And one of the criticisms, I guess, was his hands are like an inch smaller than Carson Wentz's. Is that a huge deal for you? Is that something that you think that's a big deal for GMs? What are your thoughts on that?
You know what? I really laugh at things like that because, you know, you guys have been doing this a long time. You know, a guy can have an absolutely phenomenal college career, and then we're going to find out from the combine that, oh my gosh, he's got small hands, you know, and he's going to drop 7 spots in the draft. Look, you look at the game films, you look at what he did at the combine. He can either make the plays or he can't. He can make the throws or he can't. He can sit in the pocket and go through the progressions or he can't. And to me, that's really what matters the most. I mean, you know, did he have the greatest vertical leap, you know, at the combine out of all the quarterbacks? No. If I'm a GM, do I care? No. Does the guy win? Does he make the plays? Does he lead a team? Is he going to cause me problems off the field? Which, clearly, there are no indications that Goff has any of those issues, then he's my guy. And it really is that.
The team that picks second is Philadelphia. And I just kind of want to do a comparison, Wentz versus Goff. It's widely expected they're going to take Goff. I think it's kind of a slam dunk. They're going to take Wentz. It's kind of a slam dunk they're going to take Wentz. What are they choosing, and what are the Rams deciding not to choose?
I think that Wentz has got great physical attributes. You know, he certainly got the size. I mean, he's 6'5", about 235 pounds. He certainly has really good pocket awareness. Now, he did suffer, you know, a significant wrist injury his last year at North Dakota State. He missed about 8 games. He came back and played well at the end of the season, came back and played well throughout the playoffs and the national championship game. But, you know, one of the things that I'm looking at if I'm looking at the draft is we don't know what he is against big time competition. I mean, you know, he played division, you know, Division II at North Dakota State, and, you know, he did really well against what we would generally consider lesser competition. I need to see him be able to do that against bigger, faster, stronger NFL players. And so to me, there's a little bit more of an unknown with him than there is with Goff. And that's why you're going to take Goff one and let Philadelphia have Wentz at two. Wentz physically down the road may have a bigger upside. He may have a higher ceiling, but that's a couple years down the road in my estimation.
So let me ask one, sure. One more thing here, about Wentz. You know, you talk about the program and coming from that, so I guess it's FCS now, right? Do I have that right?
Right. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
An FCS program. He wouldn't be ready to start game one, and there's a potential that Goff will be. I mean, if he's taken number one, I think it's 17 of the last 24 quarterbacks chosen at number one in the NFL draft have started game one. Wentz probably wouldn't be able to do that, but Goff probably could, right?
I think that's absolutely correct. I think Goff has proven himself against high-end competition in the Pac-12 and, of course, nationally. And, with Wentz, I think I said earlier Division II, but, of course, I meant FCS, that, you know, we need to see what he does against the bigger, better competition. And it's an unknown right now.
With Goff, you know, you talked about the air raid offense that the Sonny Dykes ran at Cal. When you heard Les Snead and Jeff Fisher talk yesterday at the lunch press conference, they talked about, you know, you got a good defense, you got a young, talented offensive line, you of course got Todd Gurley. Don't expect him to be throwing the ball 50 times a game. He's going to be handing the ball off a lot. Do you think that's going to be an issue for Goff, or is it going to be something that, you know, bringing him along slowly like that, if he ends up getting the job, would something that would benefit him?
I think it's a luxury to have Gurley in the backfield. It's a luxury for the coaching staff, and it's a luxury for Goff, because while he is more NFL ready, in my estimation, than Wentz is, that doesn't mean he's Joe Montana starting week one. You know, it's still going to take some time. And so to have Todd Gurley in the backfield allows you to be able to adjust the offense to what Goff can do, to bring him along, not slowly like you would Wentz, have him in there, have him start, but you're not putting the entire game on his shoulders either.
So would you expect, I mean, we know Case Keenum has been named technically the starter, I think Les Snead said a while back. Would you expect Goff to start game one?
Yeah, I know that Keenum's been, as you put it, technically as the starter, because what else is a GM going to say right now, right? But I think clearly you're going to have quarterback competition throughout camp, and I think that if Goff is clearly better, then I think that they're not going to hesitate to go with him. You know, look, we all watch enough football. One of the most popular guys on the football team is the backup quarterback, right? Because the minute anything goes wrong with a questionable starter, all the fans in the stands are putting their binoculars on the sidelines waiting for the backup quarterback to start warming up. I think the Rams don't want to find themselves in a position like that for too long. Maybe they start Keenum at the beginning of the season, but again, new stadium, new home, new everything. You don't want to get the fans too restless too quickly.
It's going to be a weird draft day for the Rams, because obviously trading up to get that first pick, and there's a long wait, like we mentioned at the top of the show, and, you know, a couple of picks in the fourth round. I don't know how much you've looked at this, Tony, just to see, but what direction do you think? It's probably changed a lot to have like a first rounder and a couple seconds. Now you have one firster and, you know, one first round and a couple fourths. I don't know if you think the strategy should change at all for Lesney. What do you think they're going to do at this point?
Well, as you guys pointed out earlier, they've got a good defense. They've got a good young offensive line. They obviously have a great running back in Gurley. I think you got to start looking at some wide receivers at that point. If you do that, I think you have to accept the fact that the guys who, you know, all the top name guys who are going to stretch the field for you and have an air raid type of capability for your offense, they're going to be gone by the fourth round. You know, I'm talking obviously about the Laquan Treadwells or the Josh Doctsons or the Corey Coleman from Baylor or Will Fuller from Notre Dame, probably even Sterling Shepard from Oklahoma. Those guys are going to be gone by the time you get to the fourth round. That having been said, there is a lot. This is a very deep draft for wide receivers. There aren't the three or four who are going to be surefire Hall of Famers. These are the guys, but there are a lot of really good, high quality wide receivers. So even in the fourth round, there's probably five, six guys that you can look at, which are going to make your team. And given the proper amount of work and time, can have a positive impact on your offense.
You know, just looking around, and you know this really, really well, the guys that could potentially be there. I mean, I'll throw you some names. You tell me, and you know these guys, you know, their play and their abilities.
Sure.
Well. Pharaoh Cooper from South Carolina, Tyler Boyd from Pitt, Rashard Higgins from Colorado, Leonte Karen from Rutgers, and Sterling Shepard from Oklahoma. Do you think those guys are all gone by the fourth round?
I think Shepard is gone, and I think you mentioned Tyler Boyd. I think he's gone. I think Cooper, I think you cross your fingers and hope that Cooper is still there. I think Cooper could hopefully maybe be there. You know, the kind of sketchy part is not only are you picking in the fourth round, but you're picking 12th in that fourth round. So you got a little bit of a wait even when they hit the fourth round. I think if Pharaoh Cooper from South Carolina is there, I think you grab this guy. He's got a great work ethic. He's a very disciplined player. I mean, he was all conference as a freshman in the SEC as an all-purpose player because he was returning punts and kicks at South Carolina, as well as being a wide receiver. This is a kid, I watched him a lot. He hits that top speed really quickly off the line. You'll see a lot of wide receivers who kind of have to work into their top speed. This guy's got that quick hitch right off the line. He's got great change of direction. He's a really good football player. And again, one of the things that I would really reinforce is he's a very disciplined football player, very disciplined route runner. He grew up in a military family. I think between his father and his uncles, he was probably one of the few in his family who didn't join the military. So it's a very, very disciplined, very high work ethic family. The downside is he's 5'11". There's not much you can do about that at this point. He is what he is, but he's a guy who can stretch the field for you. So I think you kind of, you know, get your little prayer beads out and hope that Pharaoh Cooper is still there. If he's not, if he's gone, you kind of probably have to change up a little bit and look a little bit more at some slot receivers, because he's probably one of the last of the real speed burners who you're going to be able to get a shot at. I like Aaron Burbridge from Michigan State. Had a great senior year, had 1,200 yards worth of catches, 7 touchdowns, which was a huge increase over his junior year. He became the go-to guy for Connor Cook at Michigan State. You know, he's got decent size. He's 6'1". He's about 210. Had a really good senior bowl, had a really good pro day. The thing I like about him is he had 19 catches of over 25 yards. So he was a good possession receiver. He's not going to break a lot of tackles after the catch, but he's a surefire route runner. And I really like this guy. He got dinged at the combine. You can start talking about he had a few too many drops towards the end of the season. But, you know, if you watched Michigan State's last 2 or 3 games, so did a lot of people. You know, that's not all on him. But I really like that kid, Aaron Burbridge. There's another one, and this could sound a little strange if you're going to draft Jared Goff with your number one pick, but you might want to look at Devin Kajust from Stanford. He ran a good 4.55 40 at the combine. But one of the things I want to bring up with any of these guys that you're going to get in the fourth round, this is the time when you don't worry about what they ran in the 40 or what their 3-cone drill was at the combine. With these guys this late in the draft, these are the guys you got to watch the film. You got to watch the games. You got to see what kind of routes they run. You got to see what kind of work they put into it. And, you know, Kajust coming from Stanford, you know, of course, he was one of what, 3, 4, 5 different offensive weapons that they had. but he does really, he separates well against cornerbacks. He catches the ball well in traffic. He glides well into the seams. I mean, I think he's a no brainer. Probably needs to put on about 5 or 10 pounds. Because he weighs 230 and he's 6'4", so he probably needs to put on a few pounds. But I think he's a surefire receiver. He's not gonna, you know, light anyone's hair on fire, but he's a surefire guy.
Kajuch was a stud at Stanford. You got to watch him quite a bit, and it'd be interesting to have Pac-12 rivals. Cal guy
right?
throw it to
right? Yeah, it would be kind of strange, but yeah. You know, in the NFL, you get the weird bedfellows, right?
For sure.
Hey, let's go back to the first round. We got a feel for some of the wide receivers that could potentially be there. Paxton Lynch is the third quarterback who is going to go near the top of the draft. He's also kind of a raw talent. Describe what he brings. And, you know, the Browns traded down for that pick. Hugh Jackson from Cleveland seems to be saying he'd be happy with RG3 to start the season. But are the Browns laying in the weeds? Do they trade down? And tell us about Paxton Lynch.
I think the thing with Lynch is what you're getting is a tremendous amount of potential upside. This guy was like a one-star recruit coming out of high school because he went to a high school where they ran the wing T offense. He threw 45 passes his entire high school career. So he really didn't learn to throw the ball like a big-time college quarterback until he went to Memphis. And he got better and better each year. His freshman year was a disaster. He had, my numbers may be off one or two here, but he had about 10 touchdown passes and about 14 interceptions, and it was a disaster. But he's 6'7", and he's 230, and you could see the physical ability in him. And he sprints out well, and he throws on the run well. So you could see with the work and the time that there's some real skill there. Now, he hasn't gotten anywhere near his maximum ability yet because he's only been throwing the football for 3 years. So I think that's what Cleveland, if they do go in that direction, I think that that's what they're looking at. Yeah, they're going to start RG3. And RG3 is going to go on for however long RG3 can go on. But I think you're also looking at RG3 physically is not the most reliable commodity right now. And so it gives you time to work with Lynch. But he does need the time. He's nowhere near ready to start an NFL game anytime soon.
Hey, Tony,
since you're a huge Bruins fan, I got to ask this question. Miles Jack, of course, after he was injured last year, decided I'm going straight to the NFL draft, dropped out of school and began preparing, rehabbing from that injury. In the last week or so, it became known that he's got something degenerative going on with that right knee. How has that hurt him, and where do you think he lands in this draft?
Well, I think there are a handful of things with Jack. One, I think from a pure athletic standpoint, I think he's an absolute freak who would probably be a top 3 or 4 pick, you know, as an outside linebacker. I think that that's one thing that's clear, that even though when the season started in 2015, you know, he played 3 games before he got hurt in practice and was gone, as you pointed out, Steve. But he was playing middle linebacker out of necessity because they lost Eric Kendricks to the NFL draft a year earlier. He is not an NFL middle linebacker. He doesn't shed blocks very well. You got to put him on the outside, let him use his cover ability, let him use his speed, let him use his raw instincts because he's one of those guys who's got a high motor. There are a lot of legitimate questions about his knee. I think that there are enough questions that it probably drops him a good 4, 5, 6 spots. I mean, and you know, looking at different mock drafts, I saw him, you know, going anywhere from number 6 to Baltimore to number 12 in New Orleans. You know, I think, you know, the Giants actually need an outside linebacker, and I can see him fitting in there. But I definitely think that at least the questions, because there aren't answers yet on how good his knee is or could be or what his rehab will be like, I think it probably drops him 5 to 6 spots.
You know, it's funny because it's not unlike that situation that the Rams had
when they drafted Todd Gurley, who had was coming off surgery, and you didn't know exactly what you were going to get, and yet fell far enough to the Rams and turned out to be an unbelievable value at that spot.
Sure, and I can see the exact same thing happening with Jack, whether it's at 10 to the Giants or 12 to the Saints. I can see the exact same thing happening. I think that he's a little bit more of a risk at number 4 or 5.
Yeah, his cover ability is I think it's very underrated. You watched that USC-UCLA game a couple of years ago. He locked up Nelson Aguilar and, you know, was going
absolutely
on and was high draft pick. So I think when they see film like that, yeah, maybe it drops a little bit, but then someone's like, you know, we might want to take a chance on him. There's a lot he can do on the football field.
No question. I think that's absolutely right.
Tony, overall with the Rams, they've really pushed all their chips to the middle of the table. When they traded the rights to RG3, they got a lot of draft picks, and they really used it to rebuild or to build the defense with great young talent. Last year, they drafted a lot of offensive linemen. Now they're saying, all right, we got what we want. We're pushing all of our chips to the middle of the table. One thing we haven't talked about a lot is the risk that has gone into that. You know, if Goff doesn't pay off for some reason, they have really, really taken a huge roll of the dice.
I think, yeah, and I think they knew that going in. I think that, you know, like we said when we were talking about the difference between going after Wentz or going after Goff, and I think the word I used was, or the phrase I used was, that Goff is a little bit safer of a pick than Wentz. That doesn't mean he's completely safe. That doesn't mean that Goff is a gimme, that he's going to be able to guide the team, you know, into playoff potential for the next 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is. But I think that he is the safer of the bets. But again, there's no Peyton Manning here. There's no Andrew Luck here. So if you're going to take a quarterback, if you're going to give away all those draft picks and you're going to take a quarterback at number one in this particular draft, there's a significant risk involved with it.
Tony, it's funny when you talk about the draft and if you do the mock drafts and all that stuff, you know, the first round, there's crazy stuff that can happen. People start trying to project what's going to happen in the fifth and sixth round. It's like the butterfly effect. There's so many things that can happen. It's like all chaos theory going back to college and stuff. Les Snead was talking about this as far as, you know, you mentioned the Rams going after a wide receiver. He said his main goal, he never wants to pass on somebody who's very good just because that's a position of need. And I think that that's something that potentially could come up with the Rams because, yeah, it's a position of need, but if they've had someone that's maybe a second-round grade that hasn't been picked by the time they come around in the fourth round, they're probably going to go after them. I mean, this is where you kind of rely on your scouts and your analysis and what your eyeballs are telling you about these players. It's just an interesting spot going for, you know, from the first round to the fourth. But is that your same philosophy about, you know, need versus what you feel is like the highest ranked player in the draft?
I think once you get to the fourth, fifth round, I think you're taking the best available player, regardless of position. If you have, if going back to what we were talking about with some of the wide receivers, if you're the Rams and you're picking in the fourth round and Farrell Cooper is there, you're grabbing him because A, you need a wide receiver, B, he's also one of the best overall athletes still available at that spot in the draft. Once you get past that, you're as you point out, Ryan, you're going after the best possible athlete, the best football player that you can find. Whether it's a position of need or not, you'll find a way to get them onto the field and use them, even if it's on special teams, just to let them get in there and play and work into a regular position from there. Because honestly, you know, and I know that a lot of people like talking about, oh, Tom Brady was a low round draft pick and look what happened. Yeah, okay, well, there's one. All right, it doesn't happen very often. There is not a bunch of stories about Tom Brady's being plucked out of thin air in the middle rounds of the NFL draft. It doesn't happen. But you can get really good players who will become productive players for you, who will become reliable players for you, if you've done your homework. And again, that's the point where it's not about looking at what they ran in the 40-yard dash at the combine or what their vertical leap was. It's about watching the film. It's about going and talking to the coaches about what kind of kid this is. There's a kid who's going to be on the board in the fourth round who frankly is probably one of the best receivers in the draft, DeMarcus Robinson out of Florida. Kid's blazing fast. He's got great moves at the line, has great yards after catch, and no one is going to touch him because it's one of those buyer beware with this kid. If all you did was look at his stats and you saw that he was available in the fourth round, you'd think you hit gold, unless you did your homework and you watched the film and you talked to his coaches, because he got suspended four times at the University of Florida. And a lot of those things
and they have pretty, and they have pretty loose, and they have pretty loose standards down there.
He gets suspended there.
They did something. They have amazingly loose standards, and yet he still managed to fall below that bar. And so that's, again, as you were saying, Ryan, that's where your homework on these players comes in more than just looking at their stats or their times. I mean, I watch the combine, and I laugh when they're talking about the times in the 40-yard dash because, yeah, I guess for some players it's relevant. But when you've got offensive linemen and you're timing them in the 40-yard dash, are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah.
That first 10 yards is a decent blocking area. But beyond that, what lineman is sprinting downfield for 40 yards, right? Or even, frankly, even the running backs, because the next time that I see a play designed for a running back to run with no gear on and no football in his hands and run a straight line for 40 yards, that's going to be a first in an NFL game. So those things become meaningless the later on in the draft you go.
All right. Hey, last thing, I think you're a Rams fan. I grew up a Rams fan, even in Toledo, Ohio, as I've talked about before. And we're all excited that they're going to be here. We know good young defense, Aaron Donald, maybe, arguably the best defensive player of the game. At least he and J.J. Watt are both in that conversation. We know brand new quarterback and Jared Goff. What do we have here? I mean, is this Rams team one that can make the playoffs this year?
I think it's a Rams team that can compete for the playoffs. It won't surprise me if they make it. I won't be disappointed if they just miss out either. I think they're right on that edge of getting there. I think they need some good quarterback play from Goff. Again, assuming he's going to start at some point during the season. They don't need over-the-top outstanding play from Goff. They just need solid, consistent play from Goff. And with Gurley back there, with the good defense, I think that it definitely has the potential. I think that the people who went crazy, the tens of thousands of people who went crazy buying their tickets the minute they became available, I don't think they'll be disappointed in this Rams team. I think there will be a lot of good things to see. And if you watch enough football like we all do, you'll see where the upside is going to come in next year and the years to come after that.
Hey, great stuff, all Tony. Right. Thanks so much, man. That was great.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Tony Siracusa from LastWordOnSports.com. Dude, from a guy that I just followed on Twitter to, I had no idea your knowledge went this deep. That is amazing.
I watch an obscene amount of college football every week, so there isn't anybody I don't see.
When we argue on Twitter now, I'm going to have to concede that you know way more than me.
Nice, Steve.
I don't see you doing that, Steve. I don't see you conceding anything to anybody ever.
No, but I can say it right now. All right. Hey, listen, Tony, thanks a lot. We're excited for the draft and great information, and we'd love to be able to call on you again.
Anytime, guys.
All right. There's Tony Siracusa, LastWordOnSports.com. That is, that guy goes deep, man. He's talking about wide receivers in the fourth round. And I was looking at some mock drafts that go that deep, and I saw Aaron Burbridge there as one of the guys that he was talking about as a potential guy that the Rams could take. That's the one thing, Ryan, that they're missing. They'll have their quarterback. They'll have their running back. They've got a great young defense. But they are short at explosive skill players beyond Tavon Austin, who's a little guy and has, great slot receiver and can be used a bunch of different ways. Really don't have that guy that can stretch the field.
No, and I thought it set up well, I thought, Steve, with the three early picks, a first rounder and 2 seconds, and obviously trading up to one, that's going to, take that away. But just you're going to rely on that scouting department. And Tony was an encyclopedia of college football knowledge, man. It was great to see, you know, that he, you know, I think you should definitely have him on your show to talk about whoever those fourth round picks end up being for the Rams, because obviously they're going to be important, but he seems to know all those guys all the way down, up and down the board.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he definitely knows his stuff. And, I'm excited about this, tomorrow. You know, all the executives are going to be downstairs. Les Snead and Jeff Fisher and Kevin Demoff, the whole football operations department head coach. It's a ticketed event for, the Rams downstairs. Everybody that put out their $100, deposit for, season tickets. They had a lottery, and those are the people that are going to be down there. But the Rams are, you know, they are coming big. And I was talking to Ireland about this, earlier today. You know, could there be a better time for an NFL team to get to Los Angeles? The Lakers are at the worst point in franchise history. The Dodgers, 70% of the city can't watch the games on TV. And now here comes, the NFL. I just think it's the Rams are going to hit this really big. And I think it's all part of an orchestrated plan. Get the number one pick, big party downstairs, Jared Goff. It's just sort of, they clearly have a plan here in establishing themselves in Los Angeles, reestablishing themselves.
Yeah. And I, you know, not being in Chicago, being here for the draft for the fans, I think that's important. And like you said, with the other teams being down, they're buying low right now and hope they're going to be able to sell high. And with, you know, with only one team here in LA, it could change next year, of course, with either the Chargers or the Raiders, but you want to get off to as fast of a start as possible, win over as many. You're going to have the diehard LA Rams fans. You know, people are coming out of the woodwork. I was a fan forever, blah, blah, blah. You hear that a lot, but there's all these other people that you want to try to win over, and being the only game in town and the NFL being the biggest sport, you know, in our country, I think it's a huge, you know, it's a huge move for the Rams. They could have just went with Case Keenum and handed the ball off to Gurley and tried to, you know, gone, you know, 10-6 or 9-7, make the playoffs and try to do something that way. This is a much bigger splash. It's a much, much bigger risk. And I can see the reason why the organization wanted to do this, Steve, because you do want to win over those hearts of the LA fans. And it's really a good time to be doing it in LA right now.
Yeah. I mean, they're going big, which I think people appreciate. They're adding a star. I think Gurley's already going to be a star. I think Aaron Donald is already going to be a star on the defensive side. But to add that quarterback, to have that franchise quarterback, and that, you know, really, he's going to be the face of the franchise, or at least he's going to get a chance to be the face of the franchise. And, you know, by the time they get to that Shangri-La in Forum and in Inglewood in 2019, you know, ideally he will be fully developed in a franchise level quarterback at that point, and really be the guy that, you know, arguably he could be the biggest star in Los Angeles in sports.
He certainly could, and I think that's what you're banking on. And you do, most likely you don't trade up from 15-1 to not have him start, but the Rams in their history have definitely taken their time with first round draft picks, and, you know, Todd Gurley, let guys come along and develop. Now it's a little bit different because it's a quarterback. But I think you hit the nail on the head with 3 years down the road, that's when you want your franchise quarterback. So if he's been on fire the last 2 years and you can go in there, you know, but if it takes a little time to develop him, they're willing to do that. You don't want to open that huge $2 billion stadium without a franchise quarterback. So there's a lot riding on the draft tomorrow on Thursday. And it looks like Jared Goff's going to be the guy they're going to, you know, ride home and hope to bring lots of wins to Los Angeles, Steve.
Absolutely. All right. Well, there you have it. The Ramble On Podcast. Thanks again to Tony Siracusa. Last word on sports.com. Ryan, exciting draft day. I will talk to you next week here on the Ramble On Podcast.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks. And everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Ramble On Podcast, and we will talk to you.
Wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to say stuff like, because I listen to the Peristyle Podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Go ahead and give us a great review and get a 5-star rating and all that stuff. Do that old routine.
Yeah, we got to do that. So, I mean, definitely. So our website on Scout is laramsreport.com. So we put up the podcast there. But you can, if you subscribe, and Tony does, to iTunes.com, you can search for Ramble On Podcast and find us there. We're on Audio Boom. We're hosted there if you want to search for the podcast. And, of course, follow Steve, who got his old.
No, it went back to the old.
So now you're no more Steve Mason, ESPN?
Nope, it is at Venice Mace.
At Venice Mace.
Forever.
Venice Mace. So you must have had some good news over there, Steve. I'm at Inside Troy, and you can follow us on Twitter, tweet us some questions and stuff. We haven't really taken any questions yet, Steve. I guess we'll do that when the season starts rolling around. We can make this a little Q&A if you want to do that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's going to be a long summer. We can definitely do that.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Ramble On Podcast.